Bob has been a absolute tireless advocate for this industry for the last 25 years. He has been awarded, as many of you may know, as one of the top lobbyists in Washington, D.C. by The Hill magazine. He has done more for this industry on a lobbying level than probably anyone out there today. He is not only a tireless advocate of this industry, but someone who is a tiger. And when Bob Dineen gets his teeth around your ankle, if you're in Washington, D.C., he doesn't let go until you yield, and that's one of his attributes. I know Bob has a few things to say this morning. Bob was in our wedding, by the way. Bob was in my wedding. And I have stories about that, which probably aren't fit for this venue, but that's how far he and I go back. I know Bob has some things to say this morning. I spoke with him last night briefly, and he seemed pretty fired up about the whole issue with the EPA and so on. And so I'm anxious to hear what he has to say. Ladies and gentlemen, your friend and your advocate for this industry like none other, please join me in welcoming Bob Dineen.
I was really hoping I was going to get the Rocky music, too. I could understand them just giving that for Ray and Johnny. Good morning. I had to actually get out my 10 hours of work preparation for this. Winston Churchill once said that he prepared 2 hours for a 10-minute speech and 2 minutes for a 10-hour speech. We'll find out what 10 hours does for this. I was worried last Thursday that I wasn't going to have anything to say this morning. And then thankfully, EPA came through. And Friday morning, they gave me a gift. Well, as it appears, they just re-gifted something. They re-gifted the proposal that they had released in 2013 for the 2014 RVO. Because as I read EPA's proposed RVO, it looked strangely familiar. And in fact, it's not much different than what they did in 2013, other than they added 15 and 16 in much the same fashion. But I looked at the numbers. 13.2 billion gallons for 2014, 13.4 billion gallons for 2015, but 14 billion gallons for 2016. EPA's characterizing that as breaking the blend wall. I think it's maybe scratching the blend wall. I view what EPA has done as an incomprehensible step backwards. When EPA first gave us this gift in 2013, they got 330,000 comments from farmers and consumers across this country who were telling them in no uncertain terms, now is not the time to be rolling back the RFS. And it would appear EPA learned absolutely nothing from those comments. Nothing. Aside from the numbers, what's really troubling to me is that EPA is clinging to this notion of the blend wall as the justification for a reduction in the number. In their minds, there's no way you can get more than 10% ethanol into the marketplace, and we are going to hold it to what the oil companies have been asking for, 9.97%, because apparently this program now is supposed to be convenient for the oil companies. It's not supposed to drive innovation in ethanol production. It's not supposed to command changes to the marketplace that the oil companies do not want to make. EPA fundamentally does not understand the RFS. EPA doesn't understand that the mechanism to drive investments in new technologies, to drive investments in blender pumps, and to provide the economic incentive to allow E85 and E15 to be sold is the RIN mechanism. In 2013, they got all scared about rising RIN prices. They saw that as an indication that the program was not working. No! That's an indication the program was working as desired, because as that RIN price climbed, so too did the sales of E85. So too did you see the first time E15 being offered for the marketplace. But EPA doesn't get that. EPA is substituting their conclusion about what this program ought to be as opposed to implementing what the statute says it should be. And that's wrong. Now, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I don't believe a government agency can rewrite a statute. But that's what EPA is doing. For an administration that claims to care about climate change, this makes no sense, because greenhouse gas emissions will increase as a consequence of this rule. For an administration that seems to care about gas prices, this rule will minimize the amount of lower cost ethanol into the marketplace and incentivize more fracking, more high-priced oil. For an administration that seems to care about energy diversity and seems concerned about runaway fracking, this rule will result in less diversification, more fracking, more tar sands, more deep water drilling, more petroleum, less renewable fuels. For an administration that seems to want to encourage new technologies, new feedstocks, new sources of biofuels, this rule moves that backwards. Who wins with what EPA has just done? The oil companies, who are anathema to everything this administration cares about. How does that make sense? Who loses? Farmers, consumers, biofuel producers. You know, in Washington, D.C. today, there's all kinds of talk about EPA's war on coal. Well, for EPA to have released this rule within hours of their nonsensical Waters of the U.S. rule, I'm beginning to think this EPA has declared a two-front war, because they now seem to have a war on farmers. Last Friday, a reporter asked me, "Were you surprised by what EPA did?" And my initial reaction was, no, I wasn't surprised. But as I thought about that later, I'm thinking to myself, why wasn't I surprised? Why shouldn't I have been surprised that this administration is rolling back a program that has been, by any measure, an unmitigated success? And I started to think about that. And the answer is because in this administration, this EPA, consistently, when they have been given a choice as to moving the ethanol industry forward or constraining the growth of this industry, this EPA has always made the wrong choice on any number of issues. You don't believe me? When the RFS was first passed in 2007, and for the first time created a carbon scoring method that the agency was intended to implement, the agency got all wrapped around the axle of International Land Use Change, ILUC. That hadn't been a subject much debated at all, actually, during the congressional deliberations on this rule. It came about as a consequence of a lawyer opining in Time magazine about how this so-called ILUC was going to result in increased carbon emissions, because if you're growing biofuels, if you're growing crops for ethanol production, clearly you are taking food out of the mouths of babies, and you've got to rip up the rainforest in order to make up for that. And EPA got so excited about this new theory, they included it in their initial carbon scoring in 2008. They didn't have to do that. We were certainly counseling him that that was premature, that based on one paper by a lawyer, not a scientist, and one that had been paid by oil companies, that maybe they should take a step back and not go down that path. No, EPA was enthusiastic about undermining the carbon scoring metric that would serve as the foundation for this program. What's worse, and two, they have refused to update that analysis completed in 2008. There has been more that has been added to this dialogue beyond Tim Sertinger's original polemic. Each and every scientific analysis independently done since 2008 have concluded that EPA's calculations with respect to indirect land use change is wrong. Even the California Air Resources Board has recognized that those early assessments are wrong and have changed their model to reduce the impact. EPA won't. The RFA has asked EPA repeatedly, redo your analysis. Why, they say, it doesn't matter. All your plants are grandfathered. We don't care about it. Well, we most certainly care about it. Because EPA's analysis is wrong, it empowers groups like the Environmental Working Group to put out these papers that say we're worse than gasoline from a carbon perspective. And that is intellectually dishonest. It's not accurate. And the only reason EWG is allowed to get away with that nonsense is that EPA refuses to update their analysis. Three, the agency has been exceedingly slow in approving any new pathway for biofuels. Now, they recently tried to change it and streamline it and make it a little bit better. It's still awful. It took more than 3 years, just to get the agency to acknowledge that the fiber in a corn kernel was cellulose and could also generate a D3 cellulosic rind. 3 years for that. Come on. You could get a freshman chemistry student to tell you that fiber is cellulosic. Four, the agency has also been systematically late in promulgating the RVO rulemakings. Now, why, I don't know. It's not that terribly hard. The statute has told them what the volumes should be. DOE gives them what gasoline demand is going to be pretty early on in the process, but EPA consistently has missed their deadlines. And that means uncertainty. Uncertainty helps only one stakeholder in this process, the oil companies, that don't want to see investments in new technologies, that are continuing to dissuade marketers from offering E15 or E85. This agency cannot seem to do the basic stuff because it might help us. Earlier in 2014, there was an issue raised about biodiesel RIN fraud. Now, EPA was catching the people that were committing the fraud. And, in fact, several people have gone to jail. In my mind, that suggests to me that the system that they had in place was working. People go to jail. But the oil companies decided, no, we want to have belt and suspenders. And they got EPA to create this program, this QAP program, that could have been focused just on biodiesel, which is where the issues were. But no, EPA says, ethanol, you guys have to have this too. But we'll make it voluntary. Voluntary, my eye. Because the oil companies demand that the product be sold under the QAP moniker. There was no reason for them to extend that onerous program on our industry because there are structural differences between how biodiesel is sold and how ethanol is sold. Ethanol producers cannot separate the RINs from the gallons. If we sell a gallon of ethanol, it's got a RIN attached. Period. End of discussion. No QAP program was necessary. Nonetheless, EPA in their infinite wisdom says, no, you guys have to have it too. They created, this is number six for those of you that aren't counting. They created a cellulosic waiver credit program that is so riddled with problems that the oil companies have now concluded it's easier to wait for a waiver credit at the end of the program than from actually going out and purchasing a gallon of cellulosic ethanol. You don't believe me? Ask those folks that are producing cellulosic ethanol today, Quad County, Abengoa. They will tell you there aren't buyers because EPA structurally has created a system where oil companies will just as soon wait for a cheap waiver credit that the agency will make available rather than purchase a gallon of cellulosic ethanol. We meet with the agency, we outline the problem, and we get this perfunctory letter back saying, oh no, you people have misunderstood the marketplace. You can sell these gallons. I'm sorry, there isn't a bureaucrat at EPA that has ever produced or sold a gallon of ethanol. And they are ignoring the people that do. Doesn't make any sense. Now you say, but Bob, EPA's been helpful. Look, they allowed E15 to be sold. Well, let's look at that for a second. It was the Department of Energy that did the testing leading to the approval of E15 in the first place, not EPA. It was the Department of Energy that put in hundreds of millions of dollars to do that testing. What did EPA do with it? Well, EPA decided that they needed to bifurcate the market, that they could only approve E15 for 2001 and newer vehicles. Now, that had never been done before. Any other fuel waiver EPA had ever approved was for all vehicles. And it wasn't like they had data in front of them suggesting that E15 was harmful to older vehicles. In fact, the only data on that issue that they had in front of them was provided to them by the RFA that had Ricardo, an engine firm, an internationally respected engine manufacturer, say there is no regulatory, there is no materials compatibility, there is no emissions reason why, if you approve E15 for a 2001 vehicle, it not also be approved for a 2000 vehicle. But EPA said, oh, we don't have data for older vehicles. Well, of course not. You've got to do the testing for the full life of the vehicle. How can you do testing for the full life of a vehicle on a fuel that hasn't been in the marketplace on a car that's 20 years old? It can't be done. And there, for the first time, EPA decides we're going to bifurcate the market. Now, nine, that decision led to EPA imposing extraordinarily onerous and unprecedented reporting, registration, and labeling requirements that even today discourage some marketers from offering E15. Thank you very much, EPA. 10. As part of this, and created completely out of whole cloth, EPA requires marketers to provide them with a misfueling mitigation plan. Now, there was nothing in any statute giving the agency the authority to do that. But this is something that they felt compelled to do on their own. Now, the RFA again came in, and we have a model misfueling mitigation plan for a marketer to use, but quite frankly, they shouldn't have to. As part of that misfueling mitigation plan, EPA has prohibited E15 from being sold at a pump or a hose that offers E85. We thought that was a little bit odd. And we said, why? EPA, for the very first time, had decided to regulate the 0.3 gallon remaining in the hose after a fill. And their concern was, if somebody came in and filled their vehicle with E85, and then the next customer came in and only wanted E10, they might get E10.4. Oh, my goodness. It's laughable if it weren't so frustrating. 0.3 gallon is in that hose. The EPA had never before regulated the residual fuel, but in this case, they felt compelled to do so. As part of their overall plan for E15, they also decided that they needed to have a much better sense as to where the E15 was actually being sold. And so they required a nationwide fuel survey that was the cost of which was to be borne by both the refiners and the ethanol industry. It's a $2.5 million tax on our industry. Now, again, there was no specific authority for them to do this. I don't recall reading any place where the Congress has given EPA the authority to tax an industry, and that's all this is. And they wanted it to be nationwide. E15 is being sold in 12 states today. We're growing that. We hope to get to 16 by the end of the summer, but it's not out there a lot. What EPA really wants is information about conventional gasoline, which they can't get any other way. So they've come to our industry and said, you pay for it. That's all this is. The refiner said, no, we're not doing it. We're not going to give E15 that advantage. And so, thankfully, I guess, the ethanol industry said, well, if they won't fund their half, we'll fund the whole thing. It's a tax on our industry that gets us nothing. And it's another instance where EPA has abused its authority to discourage the use of ethanol. That's a dozen. But let's give them a baker's dozen, because I haven't talked about the one that annoys me the most. And that is the agency's outright refusal to provide volatility parity for E10 and E15. Now, here's where my having been in this industry for close to 30 years comes back to haunt them. Because I remember in 1988 when EPA, when EPA provided the volatility tolerance for E10. They did it for two reasons. One, they had concluded that a marketer was not going to be able to get a specially tailored blend stock for E15 in the absence of a tolerance. And they wanted to make sure that ethanol had marketplace opportunities. And two, they had concluded that there were no real environmental hazards associated with providing the volatility tolerance to E10. So they provided it. And so instead of having a marketer having to find a low RVP blend stock to blend ethanol with, they could rely upon that volatility waiver, and ethanol finally began to grow. That was an EPA and an administration that wanted to see growth in this industry. Now, let's revisit those same two circumstances. If you are a marketer and you want to offer E15, you have, during the summer months, have to identify a low RVP blend stock, a specially tailored blend stock that the refiners refuse to make available at the terminal. From an environmental standpoint, we had the Department of Energy several years ago do an analysis and determine that Actually, the environmental profile of E15 is better than for E10 because you're getting more reductions in exhaust emissions, more reductions in toxics, and you're not getting as large an impact on evaporative emissions. So you have the same situation, you have a better environmental situation, and EPA refuses to provide the volatility waiver for E15. Okay, I say. All right, if you don't want to go there, then remove the volatility tolerance for E10. We want parity. It doesn't matter how we get it. And the fact of the matter is, today E10 is sold nationwide. Let the refiners have to worry about providing that lower RVP fuel. I don't care. And they say, no, we can't do that either. Why? Well, the statute doesn't allow it. That's nonsense. They created the volatility tolerance with statutory authority they had in 1988. They can take it away because that statutory authority is still there. They refuse to do it. I could go on and talk about more. You've got CAFE. They eliminated the CAFE credit for flex fuel vehicles. It's already having an impact because automakers are reducing the amount of flex fuel vehicles they're making available. In Tier 3, they've allowed autos to petition for higher octane and higher ethanol cert fuels, but only when those fuels are broadly available in the marketplace. How are you going to get a new fuel broadly available in the marketplace if you can't get it certified ahead of time? You can ask Dave Vandegrin how EPA has completed the testing for ethanol blended fuels and how EPA has manipulated that data. Or you could ask him how EPA has failed to aggressively regulate toxics in gasoline, all things that would encourage greater ethanol use. This EPA doesn't get it. The RVO proposal, is that. It's a proposal. And there will be a public hearing in Kansas City on June 25th. I implore you to get to Kansas City. I beg you to make your voice heard. Let's let EPA get it from the heartland of what this proposal has done to this industry. Give them the comments. We submitted hundreds of thousands of comments in 2014 on that ridiculous proposal. We need to do it again. Some have suggested that really the answer is a legislative change. No. There's nothing the matter with the law. There's something desperately wrong with EPA. Legislative change to that agency. Make that agency enforce the law. Tell that agency that we've had enough of their arrogance, enough of their creating statutory authority where none exists and ignoring statutory authority when Congress has been crystal clear. It's not a problem with the statute. It's a problem with an agency that thinks they know better. Now, fact is that the ethanol industry has thrived despite EPA's efforts. And they've thrived in the face of all this nonsense because of the people in this room. And we will continue to thrive. We will. We're going to work on creating export markets. We know that you're going to continue to innovate in both first and second generation technologies. We're going to move this industry forward. EPA can go frack. We are going to move this industry forward. Ray said it better than I. Don't give up. Winston Churchill. I began with one of his quotes. I'm going to end with one of his quotes. When you're going through hell, keep on going. That's what we're going to do, and we will win. Thank you.